الله أكبر الله
Haji.
Welcome to Doc's Freedom Files.
Freedom. Keep walking, keep on your toes, and don't stop talking about freedom.
Sweet Pea and I recently watched the Cold War movie classic Red Dawn again. The film still holds up well, decades after it was made, and there are still lessons to be learned from it. It was filmed in 1984, an era when people were more worried about winding up in Soviet concentration camps than our own FEMA versions. I don't think I'm going to give away any plot spoilers here, but if you're one of the two or three people who've never seen this movie, tune out now. The film's plot centers around a communist invasion of the United States by the then Soviet Union and their Cuban client state. A group of small-town high school students avoids capture by fleeing to the mountains and become anti-communist guerrilla fighters. They then proceed to wreak mayhem on the occupiers of their community. At the time of its production, the film was widely condemned by the left as over the top and depicting an implausible scenario. But if one makes allowances for a bit of Hollywood excess, the core of the film is essentially plausible. Insurrection is basically a young man's game, and throughout history, many insurrectionists, including those in our own American Revolution, were in their teens when they took up arms. It is also true that small guerrilla forces can vex much larger regular armies. This has been proven many times in recent history, with the U.S. experience in Iraq and Afghanistan, the Soviet experience in Afghanistan, the Vietnam War, and even the experience of the Axis armies fighting Eastern European communist guerrillas in World War II. At one point in the movie, the mayor's son, a childhood friend of most of the group, proves to be a traitor. He is discovered to have smuggled a tracking device into camp, allowing Soviet troops to discover their location and then mount an attack. The Patriot guerrillas successfully defend against the attack and capture one of the Soviet soldiers. In the next scene, the Patriots execute their traitorous comrade and the captured Soviet soldier. The camera then shows the guerrillas mounting their horses and slowly riding away, with the bodies of the Soviet soldier and their traitorous erstwhile friend lying in the foreground. It is one of the film's more somber moments. "I don't think I could do that," I said to Sweet Pea as the scene ended. "Why not?" she asked, with more than a hint of surprise. "Honey," I replied, "I could never ride a horse worth a damn." This is Doc Toops wishing you life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Well, you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, "Get off of my back"?
I just wanna let you know. Yeah, get off of my back and into my game. Get out of my way and out of my brain. Get out of my face and get your face shot.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds. And if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench. And we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
Well, here we are. Welcome to another edition of The Shooting Bench, the 1st of August. My gracious, this year has gone crazy. I know you guys get tired of hearing me say that, but it just seems like every year, every month, this keeps going faster and faster. This is 2018, and to me, it just started, and now it's dang near over already. So that class in Colorado is coming up here in about, 6 weeks now, I guess, be 14th, 15th, and 16th of September. You know, we just had a little rifle class here last weekend, it wasn't advertised. It was mostly local people. And sometimes I wish I could. I mean, I'm sure I could. I just don't know if it would make everybody happy. But I would like to record the comments and everything that are, you know, kind of off the line, behind the scenes when we do this kind of stuff. It's pretty consistent with every class that we do, and some of you that has taken classes, you may have experienced some of this. Let me get over here first before we get carried away and check the chat room, see if we got any noise happening anywhere. Let's do this right here. Thank you, Nan. Glad you made it in here tonight. Tebow, thank you. Nan, my alarm went off, and I decided it was time to do the show, too. Good thing I set the alarm, huh? So, anyway, glad you guys could make it. Anyway, during this class, I was probably during the class, I got to thinking about this, and it's been the same, been really consistent for, you know, 15 years. And that is finding out that the surprise, I guess, on their end, and I don't mean this in a derogatory manner, the amusement or maybe the pleasure that I get out of finding out that moment when people discover that they don't know what they don't know. And it takes people sometimes a little while to figure that phrase out, that you don't know what you don't know. What that means is you get to a point in the class and you realize that, I saw this a lot of times in the concealed weapons classes in Farmington when we do big classes every single week. And there was almost always there was some older guy in the back, and sometimes two or three of them, that sit back there and look around, tap their pencil on the table, and doodle on their paper, and piddle around, and then we get about a third of the way through the class, and there'll be something, and it usually was something involving lethal force, where pretty soon they slow down a little bit and the pencil quits tapping and they turn it around and use the other end and they'll take a little note and they'll look and they'll get a little more interested and they'll take some more notes. And those people, out of all of them, often those are the ones that are the first ones to come up at the end of the class and say, you know what? I had no idea there was this much to this. I didn't know that. You know, whatever the topic may have been that got their attention. And that's when they find out that they don't know what they don't know. And that's the hardest thing about putting these classes together, is convincing people that they don't know what they don't know. You take this was a little bolt-action rifle class that we had out here last weekend, bolt-action rifles, you know, for the most part, for most people, are pretty simple. Not a whole lot to them. And it seems that there's just not a whole lot you can do with one except load it, work the bolt, pull the trigger, work the bolt again, put it on safety when you get done, and unload it and put it away. And when you get into rapid firing, as rapid as you can with the bolt action, you get into tactical reloads, malfunctions. Does a bolt action rifle malfunction? Yeah, it's usually your fault, not the gun's. Once in a while, you'll get a rough, dirty, hot chamber or something that, pull the rim off of a shell and leave it in the chamber more often than not, if it's the gun's fault, it's probably a mechanical malfunction that puts the gun out of action. But a lot of times probably the most common thing in the bolt action rifle is short stroking the bolt, where you don't pull it all the way back and you kind of jam a round up in there, and then you pull it back again, and now you're trying to feed two of them. Or you pull it back and you start a shell in there, and then you pull it back to look again, and you drop that shell off and pick up another one and try to... that's usually what it is. Sometimes you will short stroke and not quite throw the empty shell out all the way and put the same shell right back in there. And that's just a matter of you know, getting in the habit of working the bolt all the way to the rear and closing it, you know, firmly and trusting it when you do that. Don't stop and look. Just trust it, get it shut, and get the thing up there and shoot it again. And another real common thing with bolt actions is they lever actions too, maybe probably pumps, anything rather than semi-automatics. And that's pulling the trigger, boom, right, work the bolt, boom. Well, that was pretty good. Let's walk down there and see what we did. And walk away with an empty shell in the chamber. Is it safe? Absolutely. Very safe way to carry it. But for the type of training that we do, we're not, you know, in a hunting situation, that's really not a big deal. Okay, you might miss your buck because you forgot you left an empty shell in there, but he's probably not going to kill you. In other environments, it may kill you. So when you're working a bolt or, you know, a manually operated gun, bolt, lever action, pump, whatever, work that action immediately. Make your shot, follow through, work the action. If you don't need to shoot again, fine. But if you do, you need to do it desperately. So get it back in action as quickly as you can. And so, you know, early on in this class, these guys figured out that, you know, they didn't know what they didn't know. And they got very, very attentive and very into it. You know, they really enjoyed their class. They had a lot of fun. Doc, you know, I don't know if I share the love as much with the Mauser action as everybody else does. You know, I won't ever talk bad about one because I know they are definitely a proven design and they've worked well for a long, long, long time. It's funny that the only two bolt action malfunctions that I've seen in the field that were the gun's fault were both Mauser actions. One of them was a Ruger and one of them was actually a Mauser. The only thing I'm not wild about, and maybe you can shed some light on this for me, but the thing that I don't like too much about the Mauser is it seems hard on the gun, or at least hard on the extractor. If you just want to dump a round in the ejection port and just slam the bolt home. It's kind of like the Glock, you know. One of the great things about the Mauser claw action is when the round comes up out of the chamber, the rim goes behind the extractor immediately before the round ever goes in the chamber. And that's a good design. It's a good positive feed. But if you want to just throw a shell in the chamber and then close the bolt in a hurry, if you run out of shells and you have to, haven't got time to load the magazine, you just throw one in there and need to close the bolt. It seems awfully hard on the extractor to do that. In a life or death situation, is it that big a deal? Probably not. You're probably not going to wear it out in, you know, a few shots right there right away. But if you practice that and make it a habit, it just seems like it'd be awful hard on it. Where with some of the others, particularly the Remington. Now, my 308s are Remingtons. Both of my 338-06s are too. But I have the Seiko or Sako extractors in them. So they are kind of the best of both worlds there. That's my point. You say you shouldn't chamber rounds like that, so therein lies the problem I have with the Mauser action. If you have run out of shells and can't load haven't got time to load, you drop one in the ejection port and slam the bolt home. And with the Seiko extractor, or the Remington claw, clip type extractor, it doesn't hurt a thing. It's perfectly all right. So I'm just that's the only reason that I'm not really attracted to that Mauser action. Yeah, I know all that, Doc. That's what I was just saying. But that's why I don't like them. My CZ is a Mauser action, and that's what I explained to the guys out there the other day. If you have one of those, it is best to feed from the magazine. That's the way they're designed to work. But sometimes you just don't have time. The bolt should pick up the cartridge from below, providing there's one there, Doc. That's what I'm saying. If you're out, you don't have one there to pick up, you drop it in the ejection port and slam the bolt home. And it's not a good thing for Glocks or Mausers, as far as that goes. But with handguns, you don't drop a single round in the ejection port and close the bolt. You know, you take, 1 second, 1.2 seconds, whatever it is, and change magazines. You typically can't do that with a bolt-action rifle. If it's a magazine-fed gun, yeah, you can do it in a pretty short amount of time. If it's something with a blind magazine or something like that, then, yeah, you're stuck with just dropping one in the chamber and slamming the bolt home. My CZ will chamber them that way, but you got to hit it pretty hard. And I've only done that about 3-4 times. And this last time I was showing them last weekend, I just showed them where it stopped. I didn't try to slam the extractor over the rim. I just showed them the what I think is probably the one and only real, in my opinion, anyway, the one and only real downfall of the Mauser extractor. But other than that, great guns. They're one of the things that some of the guys that really talk these Mausers up is they say, well, you can rack a shell in there when you got the gun completely upside down in unconventional positions and stuff. And yeah, you can, but you can with a Remington too. Work the bolt kind of quickly, and I didn't ever really see a problem with that. We've tested it. We've done it. Jason and I did it when we were working together, and didn't find it to be that big of a benefit with the Mauser action. But at any rate, like I said, that I don't like that thing about them, but the action itself, they're robust. You can make a lot of modifications to them, a lot of different calibers, a lot of chamber them in different calibers and stuff, and they just it's a great design. Been around since when? 1892, 94, somewhere in there. I guess the 98's the most popular, but I think the design came out before that. Doc would know exactly when it came out, but. Anyway, back to the class, and these guys realized there was just so many more things to do, and we're going to do another class with the same group of people here, you remember here a while back we came out with the designated rifleman class, and this is basically the same thing. We're just dividing it up into three segments, just due to time and whatever. So since they're all local folks, we can do that. That's a great point, Doc. And matter of fact, laying right here on the table in front of me, I'll tap it on my mic, is a... Pacific Tool and what is it? Pacific Tool and Guide. Pacific Tool and Die. I don't remember. Pacific something or another. custom bolt for one of my 338.6s. This bolt by itself cost a couple hundred bucks. And I thought, well, I'm going to see if it's going to work in the other 338.6, which now has a stock bolt in it. I said, I'd kind of like to have this bolt in there. But lo and behold, the bolt wouldn't close on. Both of them have Seiko extractors. Socko extractors, if you want to get technical about it. But this one wouldn't close. So headspace is not the same on it. It'll have to stick with the other gun. And I'll just have to leave them like they are. So that's a very positive point for the Mauser there, for sure. Main basic one is 93, 95, 98. Okay. All right. Thanks, Doc. All right, let's see here. Let's get on to these guys learned one of the before we get into the news stuff here. What they learned was you're not quite as neutered as some people would like you to believe if you have a bolt action in a firefight. Of course, bolt actions were in firefights for, you know, a century before good reliable semi-automatics and fully automatics came out. But, you know, the thing about that is both sides had bolt actions. So if you could take a bolt action against an AK or AR-15, especially with multiple assailants, you're a little bit behind the curve there. But if you learn how to run it and learn to take good advantage of cover and concealment and everything, then you still got a chance if you learn how to run it right. You'll never shoot it as fast, and you're not going to have a 30-round magazine in one. And that's the real downfall of the bolt action. But the upside is it's a little easier to reach out there 5, 6, 800 yards or more than it is with the typical semi-automatic, you know, assault-style rifle, carbine. So good and bad with both of them. You just got to have a little bit of knowledge and skill to go along with them. And who all do we have in here tonight anyway? There, AZ Bound's been in there almost the whole time, and Cajun Mimi, and Charlie Brown. My goodness, brother. I don't know if he's still in or not. He's been logged in for quite a while there, it looks like. But, dang, it's been a long time since I've seen you in here. And Tink and Doc and Minnie and Nan and NM Glock and Northwest Heavy. And Yakima Glock just come dragging in there. Tebow, one anonymous there. All right, good deal. Glad to see all you guys tonight. All right, boy, they're getting some mileage out of this straw deal, aren't they, in California? And I don't know why they made such a big deal about it in California. They didn't do that in Seattle. I mean, they didn't do it in Seattle. The whole thing started in Seattle, and then they went to California, and everybody lost their mind over it. So, but it looks like it's going to move on into New York and some other places there. And I understand the whole thing. You know, we've gotten a lot of mileage out of it. We've made a lot of jokes, and the number of memes about this straw thing, I think, outdoes any current event issue that we've had in the last for a long time. Constantly, every few minutes, another meme comes out about straws, and most of them are hilarious. And we're making fun of that, but, you know, there's a couple of things about this. One of them, and I think the most obvious to most of us that are somewhat liberty-minded, it's just one more thing. Just one of many, many, many things that they're exercising complete control over us. On the other hand, one of the memes out there is making fun of Starbucks for, and I'm all about making fun of Starbucks, okay? I wouldn't pee on them if they were on fire. But they're making fun of them because they're replacing single-use plastic straws with paper straws wrapped in a single-use plastic package. And the other thing is they're making these little sippy cup tops, which takes about, you know, two-thirds as much plastic as the straw did. Well, this has never been about the amount of plastic used. It's been about pollution and about the straws in the ocean and stuff. There was several years ago, there's a story went viral immediately about a sea turtle that got a straw stuck up its nose there or something. And, I really do get that. I understand that the amount of crap that goes in our oceans is astounding. It's absolutely mind-blowing crap that goes in there. But the thing about it is, less than 1% or about 1% somewhere comes from the United States. Most of it comes from underdeveloped countries that don't have good waste management procedures and everything. So getting rid of the straw, we did without straws for how many centuries, you know, before we started using them? When did we start using straws? 1920, 1910, somewhere in there. I don't know exactly when they came out. I think they were in wide use in the 30s. It's not the amount of straw, the amount of plastic. I don't think that these sippy cup lids are going to be nearly as much problem in the oceans as straws are. And believe you me, if there's anybody that's not a tree hugger and not an environmentalist, it's me. I mean, when they have Earth Day, I leave my lights on all night. But there's, some things are just common sense. And, I think that they're, throwing trash out the window driving down the highway is probably not a great idea if you don't want your highways to continue to look nice and your landscape alongside the road. Makes sense. That's common sense. Recycling, typical recyclable stuff. Yeah, I can understand that. We've just about ravaged this whole earth, just about all she's willing to give us. And, Doc, yeah, cocaine addicted sea turtle. That may have been exactly where that came from. I think this is 2018. It was back about the turn of the last century, right around the end of the 19th century, somewhere in there, that we discovered oil, and it was in such vast amounts everywhere. It was almost free because there was so much. We can't possibly be gullible enough to believe that that's not someday going to run out. Is it being replenished, century to century in some degree? Maybe. I don't know exactly if some of the areas are creating more oil or if we are simply draining the same reserves that there's always been. Water, oil is not like water. It doesn't go into the clouds and rain and go back into the aquifers and all that stuff. So at some point we need to realize that there may be, how many gallons do we use a day worldwide? I don't know. There's probably some estimate, but I doubt it's real accurate. So some of this stuff to me just makes a little bit of sense. Without getting stupid about it, I think that we can be somewhat conservative and use common sense with some of this stuff and help this old earth support our great grandkids. As it stands right now, I'm not so sure that it's going to. But they come out with new ways to do things and new materials and recycling a lot of. Yeah, that's right, Doc. recycling a lot of different materials and creating new materials out of those materials. And that's a good thing. You know, we're coming up with all kinds of ways to do this. But plastic has become a problem. This has been, you know, that's why some places offer multiple use, I don't know what you call them, little canvas or plastic, reinforced plastic reusable bags for groceries instead of the infamous Walmart bag. You know, as in Wyoming, they called the Walmart bag the Wyoming State Bird because their wind blows 365 days a year and the bags are everywhere. And it has created a problem. I don't know how much petroleum is used every year to create Walmart bags, but I'd venture to guess that it'd fill your car up a time or two with the petroleum that you use. So, and Mimi's right. You know, there may come a time people are getting are waking up a little bit. Maybe there will be maybe we'll move to this hemp oil, at least to some degree, and help preserve our oil reserves a little bit. So we'll find out. So something's going to happen one way or another, whether we like it or not. It's going to happen here before long. And that's exactly right. People are scared to death there's still a whole lot of people when you talk about legalizing marijuana or legalizing hemp, you know, that, you know, Tebow, I think about that song more often probably than most people. That song, when I was a kid, when I was probably, when did that song come out? I was probably, I was probably about 10 when that song came out. In the year 2525. And that, it used to scare me then, you know, in 1966, 65, whenever it was, it bothered me, that song did, because I got to thinking about it, you know, what's going to happen? You know, at that point, the 21st century was so unrealistic to even consider. The year 2000, really? And, I just put it out of my mind as being, you know, unrealistic. Here it is, 2018. I'm still alive. And so there's been a lot of stuff. I think about our generation, you know, people that are over 40, over 50, people that are over 50 right now. Every generation has seen things come and go, and great technological advances and stuff. But I think our generation has seen so many things. The everything from the telephone on the wall like in Petticoat Junction. Hey, Sarah, you want to give me the general store? And then party lines push button, you know, everything from rotary dial to the push button keypad to cell phones that weighed, you know, 12 pounds in a bag the size of a small suitcase to now you put something in your pocket that is, will do more than a whole room full of computers would do in 1960. We've seen a lot. Look at what we've seen in transportation. You know, those of us that are 50, 60 years old or more have seen advances in engines and transmissions, radios, I mean, everything about the vehicle. Look at what we've seen. And I just, and that year, that song in the year 2525 used to get to me a little bit. Nan said it was released in 1969, so yeah, I was 13 years old. I was pretty close. Thank you, Nan. Man, that wind's blowing out there. I'm hoping Liberty Lounge will go well this week. We've had a little trouble that's finally starting to dry out a little bit. We had a rainstorm yesterday. It lasted about 3 minutes. It rained so damn hard, I couldn't see a 40 by 60 garage that's 50 feet from my front door. I mean, it absolutely freaking poured. Poured like poured. Like somebody tipped the ocean upside down and dumped it on the earth. About 3 minutes. Water was running everywhere like a Noah's rainstorm had come. And then it quit. That's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. Well, at the Tinker, you don't know how much I agree with you on that. The old 60s and even the 70s car engines. Something break down, something go wrong. Yeah, you could work on it. The other side of that coin, though, you know, those were when cars had 12,000-mile warranties. 1 year, 12 months, or 12,000 miles. And now they have, you know, I guess 100,000, 50,000-mile warranties or whatever. You know, it's not unusual at all to get a quarter of a million miles on the average car. My old truck's got 400,000, and it's still plugging along. You didn't get that kind of mileage out of the average car. You know, once in a while, if you took somebody that was easy on their car and kept it, didn't go four-wheeling with it or whatever, and was meticulous with their maintenance and everything, they could get quite a bit. But 100,000 miles, that was a big deal. You know, I remember people saying, I got 100,000 miles, almost 100,000 miles. Really? Wow. 100,000 miles now? So what? Yeah, when it breaks down, you can't work on it on the side of the road, but it ain't going to break down for 25 years. I don't know about that long, but anyway, long time. You know, it used to be that air conditioners in your car, you wanted to have it turned off before you started it because it pulled the engine down too much. You didn't want to set an idle with it with the air conditioner on in hot weather. Your car was guaranteed to overheat in about 10 minutes or less. And now, the way the clutches are and everything in them, doesn't matter. You can leave it on. It doesn't pull the engine down like it used to. And you can leave it running for quite a while in over 100-degree weather, just parked, and it doesn't seem to affect it too much. I'm sure there's does to some degree, a little bit, but not like it used to. So, anyway, we could get into the... I think I've probably already told you about some of the things I used to do with some of the old engines. You couldn't fix some of the newer things. You can't fix a fuel-injected engine with a condom. I did that with a fuel pump on a 1966 Ford in Gallup, New Mexico one time. And I've already told you about that on the show once. But you can't jerry-rig the stuff on them that we used to do. And it, you can't put 22 shells in place of fuses anymore and stuff like that. But there's looking at the chat room here. All right, well, we've gone right through our break time here. But anyway, I don't know how I get off on these tangents to this kind of stuff. But, you know, once in a while, I guess because you get older and you look back and say, boy, look at the, ask Tebow about CB radios. You know, the old 23-channel radios with fuses in them and I'm not fuses, what am I saying, tubes. And the little chips, what the hell is the little thing to change channels? You pull them out and switch them around and stuff. I forgot what you call those. Wasn't chips. What the hell? Anyway, all that stuff is gone. Now, if you look at the 40-channel radio that's been peaked, tuned, and converted, weighs about 20% or less of what the old tube CBs, 23-channel CBs, cost. I mean, weighed. Not that that makes any difference to anybody. It's just one of the many things that I've thought about before. Okay. Two crystals. Thank you, Dinker. Damn, I don't know why I couldn't remember that. Anyway, you know, all the used to be a big deal in the buy those little walkie-talkies and get crystals for it for other frequencies and stuff. That was fun. A little different now, ain't it, T-Bone? All right, let's see. We got to get into something else here. I didn't waste the whole damn show here reminiscing. Well, here's a good story I'll have to read later. All right, let's move along here. John McNaught. You guys, you've heard me talk about John McNaught a little bit. He's the painter that paints such amazing, amazing pictures of, you know, political stuff. Been doing it for quite a while. He's just come out with a new one right now, and I don't remember what the name of it is, but it has to do with, the name of it is Crossing the Swamp. And it's just like, it's reminiscent of Washington crossing the Delaware, where you've got patriots in the boat, you know, hold the flag. You can see the Capitol building, you know, in Washington, D.C. You can see it up in the way background there. And Trump is standing up on the boat with his leg cocked up there, just like George Washington did, and holding a lantern. And it's just, he's crossing the swamp that he's draining there. It's a great picture. If you haven't looked at John McNaught's stuff, you are definitely losing out. You're cheating yourself out of a great experience. I'm not an art aficionado by any remote stretch of the imagination, but if you look at some of the pictures that John's done, just go to, I'm not sure what his website is, but you can find it. You spell John, J-O-N, J-O-N, McNaught, M-C-N-A-U-G-H-T, I believe. And look at some of the things that he's done. Some of them are heartbreaking. They'll literally bring you to tears. I met John a year ago. It hadn't been quite a year. No. Last fall, I think. And been pretty close. Anyway, down in Tucson. And he's he's an awesome individual. Great speaker. Very eloquent. And you can tell by listening to him that he is the absolute epitome of a patriot. And you can see it in all of his paintings. They're just amazing. You've got to go check them out. So, anyway, check out this new one, especially Crossing the Swamp. A lot of good ones. There's, let's see how far I need to go back here. I'm so damn far. Okay, this one has brought a lot of controversy. Thank you, Nan. Nan went and looked it up. John McNaughton, not McNaught. Not McNaughton, not McNaughton. How'd you like that, huh? McNaughton. McNaughton. this story got a lot of mileage on Facebook. Still is. This is a story about the police in Aurora, Colorado, had shot and killed a resident who had just shot and killed an intruder. And everybody's going nuts about it. I posted it on Facebook. But you have to, if you weren't there, you cannot, at this point, blame the police on this one. They were called to a armed intruder. And I'm sure that other residents called after shots had been fired before the cops got there. Now, what we don't know is exactly how the resident handled himself when the cops drove up. The cops are expecting to find a man with a gun. If you walked out the door or were standing in the living room or whatever holding the gun when the cops came in, there is a strong possibility that you're going to get shot. So I can't blame this one on the cops right now. The one about the Trader Joe's the other day, that's another one. I can't, you know, I'd like to make fun of Los Angeles PD because they suck. But I wasn't there. I couldn't see what they saw. Where was that girl? Were the shots through and through? Did the shots go through the bad guy, or did they miss the bad guy and just go into the building? What were they seeing? What was the crowd around them? This guy was actively shooting people, had already shot two people, and was shooting at more, and shot at cops. How much leeway do you give him because there's bystanders to stop him from shooting? I don't understand what you mean, Mimi. What do you mean, why lethal force? You use lethal force because he was shooting at you, or he had a gun. When you have a gun, they typically use lethal force. There's no time to holster your weapon and draw your taser and shoot if the guy is standing there holding the gun. You don't know who the guy is. It's unfortunate. It's a damn shame that it worked out the way it did. But, you know, having not, that's one of the things, Mimi, that we, one of the topics that we run into a lot in teaching defensive weapon use. And it's one of the questions that is asked more than any other question is, couldn't you have done something else to disable him? Why couldn't you shoot him in the knee? Why couldn't you get your taser? Why couldn't you, he just had a knife, why did you have to shoot him? There's 1,000 questions just like that. But I know, Mimi, and I'm not getting on you here. I'm just trying to explain it to you. And this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, is that people, particularly in the use of lethal force, don't know what they don't know. You'll hear more people say, "Well, you know, he's in my house. I'd shoot him and kill him." Well, that's very possibly going to put you in jail. That depends on how much threat there was, what the threat was offered to you, what your laws are on Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground, and what other options you had, and, you know, what state you're in, and all that kind of stuff. Many times there are other options that are feasible. But you have to understand that if a man is standing there holding a gun, even if it's down to his side, he can raise that gun and fire in less than a second. There is no possible way that you can get that taser out if you already have a handgun in your hand. There's no possible. If you just walked in, didn't have anything in your hand, and was going to draw your taser, there is no possible way, if he decided to shoot, that you would have any other option. When you walk into a building and there's already been a shooting or someone in there with the gun that's been reported, you don't walk in with your hands down to your side and say, "Well, where's the guy with the gun? Let's see if we can talk him out of it." And again, maybe I'm not trying to be snotty. I'm just using these what would you call it, analogies, I guess. So and there's this whole shoot him in the knee thing has been used. I'll bet I've heard that. I know I've heard it 1,000 times. I'm sure I've heard it 1,000, 700 times, whatever. I've heard it a lot. Why didn't you shoot him in the knee? Another one is, why didn't you shoot the gun out of his hand? You know what? If that happens anywhere but Hollywood, it was an accident. There are damn few people out there that, number one, have the time to do it or the skill to shoot a gun out of somebody's hand. You see, you have to understand that if you're in a situation where something like this happens, somebody may have already been hurt. It may be in a low-light environment to start with. There may be other people around. You may have just woken up. You may not have your glasses or your contacts in. You may already be hurt. There are 1,000 things that could happen. You're going to shoot the gun out of his hand? Shut the hell up. No, you ain't. You'll be lucky if you hit the damn guy, period, anywhere. And I can tell you, from ask Yakima Glock or AZ Bound, you know, some of the people that's taken the 3-day class with the night shoot, we can put them under enough stress that even in something like that where you know that nobody's up there shooting back at you, you know what's about to happen. You've already seen the guy ahead of you do the same thing. And you still can't hit the target. That's why we have the class. And that's why we do that. Because we're hoping that through the procedures and stuff, through the things that you experience in this class, will help you to, there's no guarantee because everybody's going to be different, but we're hoping that we can help you to understand and deal with what could happen in your home or in your business, in your motel room, at a campsite, you know, wherever, on the side of the road somewhere. And this has been something that we have fought and fought. And I won't say we have fought. We've defended ourselves against and been attacked since the 60s. When people started saying, well, why did you have to shoot him? He was, you know, he was 10 feet away. Well, In 1980 something, Dennis Tuller came out with a trying to figure out how to explain this to people. Why? How far does a person need to be away before you can justifiably shoot them if they're coming at you? And I asked that question in my classes, and the most typical answer is arm's length. Well, just real briefly, if they're at arm's length, you're dead. Thank you very much. Thank you, drive-thru. Some people say 6 feet, 5 feet, arm's length, 10 feet, whatever it is. The answer is 21 feet. On the average, it's 21 feet is different for different people in different scenarios, but the average is 21 feet. It takes the average, I've said this 100 times on this show, but if it takes the average person with no training at all to cover 21 feet and inflict a fatal blow with a contact weapon, knife, club, chain, whatever. It takes a little training for the not-so-average person to be able to retrieve a weapon from a concealed position and fire a single shot into a humanoid-sized target in that same second and a half that it takes them to cover 21 feet. That's what's called a tie. And ties suck when you're talking about lethal force. So 21 feet away is tying distance. You might, if you're experienced and you've got your gun someplace where you can get to it quickly and not in a purse or something, you might get that gun out. You might get one shot off about the time they get to you if they're hurrying. and you might die trying. So the more you practice and the faster you get to do that, now, how many lethal force scenarios are fast draw events? Probably not a whole lot, but some of them are. And we need to be prepared for that. So there's my little spiel now on all that stuff. Mimi, I hope that gives you a little better understanding, or anybody else that was not, that was wondering about things like that. I hope that gives you a little better understanding of it. All right, with all that, we've just about used up all of our time, but that's okay. If we use up time and it's beneficial to people, then that's perfectly all right with me. I don't mind whatsoever. No. So we're going to start easing towards the door here in a minute. And like I said, with all things being right and normal and with a little bit of luck, we're hoping that Liberty Lounge will go off without a hitch this week. Mimi, I'm not going to try the Cajun thing again, not this soon. We'll try it two times. I will do it again, though. We'll try to get that. If I know everything's going to work well, here in give it a month or 6 weeks or something, and we'll do the Cajun thing for you again. I'd like to get through the whole damn show just once without it falling through again. So, but we'll try it again here. We'll give it a few weeks and we'll try it again. We're no shortage of music to play on Liberty Lounge. We've always got something we can do. All right. Well, I think I'm gonna scoot on out of here, and we'll see you guys hopefully for Liberty Lounge this Friday. If you're new and listening right now, please come back and join us 8 p.m. Pacific time on Friday for 2 hours of pretty much nonstop music, and it'll be classic country, classic rock, Cajun, bluegrass, whatever. We got different things we do all the time. Haven't figured out what I'm gonna do exactly yet this Friday, but we'll figure something out. NM Glock gave me an idea here a while back, and we never did follow up on it. We need to do that. I need to go back and through about 80,000 messages and find some suggestions that he sent me there. See if we can do that here one of these days soon. So there it is. I'm gonna get on out of here. We'll see you guys Friday, and I thank you for joining me again. Good night.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.